This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation Wrestling Network, welcome to a brand new series. Well, here on this very fine feed, it is Making Mount Rushmore, the sister program of the original Making Mount Rushmore over on the Place to Be Nation Pop Experience. I am your host, Andy Atherton. Thank you for joining me tonight. Tonight, we're trying to come out of the gate swinging, running. It is WrestleMania time. You're hearing this right after WrestleMania. So we're going to talk about the Mount Rushmores of Mania matches, as well as the Mount Rushmore of the Raw after Mania moments. That's like the biggest show of the year. Sometimes it's more exciting than WrestleMania, even, because you never know what's going to happen. Returns, surprises, you know, title changes, debuts, lots of stuff happens. And I have three great guys who are here tonight, going to break it down and give their thoughts. First off, let me welcome the Mississippi Mud Pie, Logan Croslin. Logan, how are you tonight?
I'm doing great, Andy. How are you doing tonight?
I'm great. Thank you for coming here on the main. You've been on the pop one many times, so I appreciate you continuing to come back, and you're here for the first run on the Wrestling Network.
Yeah, appreciate you having me on for the first one, so I hope we don't disappoint.
No, you never do. Never do. Also, Steve Riddle is here. How are you doing, Steve?
I'm doing good. Glad to be here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's great to be on a wrestling show with you for once. Usually we're talking about cartoons and Disney and video games and what have you. So yeah, it's nice to change it up a little bit.
Yeah, right in my wheelhouse.
All right, very good. And rounding out our trio of panelists tonight, Ben Locke. Hey, Ben, how are you?
Hi, Andy. Thanks for having me here on the maiden voyage. I hope I don't crush things for you.
No, you guys, I think we'll steer the ship to a smooth sailing, so to speak. Usually the podfather likes to come on my main voyages, but of course, you know, he's a little busy, you know, the mothership, you know, that kind of takes precedence, I guess, over this show. I don't know. But
that show.
That little show,
yeah. How rude.
So I just want to say, but I do want to say thank you. Scott is a good friend, a good partner, and I appreciate, as always, whenever he lets me, branch out over here onto the Wrestling Network. I come across the hall until he shoos me away, and then I go back to my side of the quad. All right, so we are talking about the greatest Mania matches. Well, maybe not the greatest matches, but the Mount Rushmore of Mania matches, because they could have significance for what they meant, what they did. Might not necessarily be the best between the ropes action, but it could be all about that moment. So we're going to start off with Logan. Logan, give us the first entry on your WrestleMania match, Mount Rushmore.
Okay, so this is my only real personal one. I think the other three are pretty much the best three matches of Mania history, but this one's personal to me. It was at the first WrestleMania I was at, WrestleMania 30. It's Daniel Bryan versus Triple H. It was the opener. Strong way to start the show. It started the show for Bryan, where he had to earn his way into the triple threat later in the night, where he eventually won the title. But just a great match, and it showed that, you know, Triple H can be kind of giving sometimes when he wants to be. So, and it just started the great night that Bryan was going to have. So that was definitely a personal one. That was my first WrestleMania, so that one had to be on there for me.
There you go. That's great. Steve, any thoughts on that pick on Bryan Triple H from 30?
Yeah, great match. What would be a great night, like you said, for Bryan? You know, he gets that great, you know, victory in the beginning, and then he closes at the end by becoming the world champion. So just arguably one of the greatest openers in Mania history. So no problems with Logan having it on his list.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Ben, anything to add?
Yeah, like C says, one of the best openers in WrestleMania history, off a card that, you know, doesn't get the credit it deserves. I think, you know, looking at it now, obviously big things happened on it with the Taker streak, and some of the things people tend to forget is that Bryan beat three members of Evolution in one night to win that title. Mm-hmm. And it's a great story throughout the night. You get the match at the beginning and the match at the end too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember it was a fun night and great one for Bryan. You know, capped off also, you see the him and Connor, You see those the shots of that. So yeah, it was just all kinds of emotions and good feelings, and it just made the night. All right, Steve, give us the first entry on your Mania match, Mount Rushmore.
All right, well, I'm going to go with probably the obvious one here. And that is, of course, from WrestleMania 13, Bret Hart, Steve Austin submission match. This was like when I was really getting locked in as a wrestling fan. I've been watching since 93 by that point, but like this is really when I was getting locked in. You know, it was an interesting time for the WWF. They were behind in the Monday Night Wars, and they were starting to slowly turn the way that like the culture was. And you had Bret, who was, you know, at one point the good guy that everyone loved, and Austin was just this, you know, hated heel. And through the course of this match, they quickly, or should say slowly, turned, where Austin became this just badass who just wouldn't quit, that everyone respected, and Bret became the whiny crybaby that was telling the truth, but nobody cared anymore about it. And it's so great about how these two had a match at that match at Survivor Series, which was a great technical work. And just 5 months later, they go out here and have just an absolute awesome brawl. Just everything, the violence, the blood, great visuals. You know, obviously the one where Austin's trying to push out the sharpshooter with the blood dripping down his face is just so amazing. Mm-hmm. Ken Shamrock as a ref, he adds, you know, a lot to the match as well. And you know, it goes without saying, it is the greatest double turn in wrestling history and would help plant the seeds for what would become the Attitude Era. So I think, you know, when we did the greatest WWE pay-per-view TV matches, it ranked number one, and I think it deserved it. And I think it deserves to be on the Mount Rushmore of WrestleMania's greatest matches.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Ben had it as well. Ben, your thoughts on this match?
Yeah. Steve pretty much made most of my points. Yeah, it was number one on my GWWE list as well. Everything about the match is just superb. You know, just right from the beginning, just, you know, even Austin's entrance with the glass shattering in the entranceway. Anybody who's heard me on any podcast knows that Steve Austin is my favorite wrestler of all time. Bret Hart ain't too far behind. What I loved about this match in particular is, you know, and Steve mentioned the match at Survivor Series. It's a totally, totally different match to that. Survivor Series is, you know, basically two guys having a wrestling match being technically savage. This is a wild, crazy, all-over-the-place brawl. And then, you know, the bit with the sharpshooter, you know, the blood coming out of the stone image, the greatest image in the history of wrestling. Sorry to all the Vince lovers at WrestleMania 19, it just is. And, yeah, everything Bret said, you know, about America, he believed it. He thought he was right. Austin was already getting cheered at this point, but he got you know, cheered out the building at the end. Bret, you know, high-fiving the fans, but getting booed at the same time. And it's just tremendous. I just love it.
Mm-hmm. That was a great time. Of course, Logan has. It was a clean sweep for this match.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Like both boys have said, the match that happened at Survivor Series was kind of a technical match that they had, and this one was just an all-out brawl. They used weapons. This is one of those matches that uses blood very well, and, you know, like Ben said, the shot at the end of the match with him with the bloody face coming down, you know, dripping down, and, you know, he just kind of passes out at the end. He never gives up because he's a tough badass, and he's never going to say, I quit. He's never going to tap out, so... yeah, just an awesome match. Love both guys, and it was just an absolute classic. Had to be on there for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yep. If I did a list and not wasn't just a moderator, I would have put it on there. All right, Ben, give us another entry on your Mount Rushmore of WrestleMania matches.
Okay, let's go back to 1987 to WrestleMania 3, and we are going for the Intercontinental title match between Ricky Steamboat and the Macho Man Randy Savage. This was a match that, this kind of match didn't happen in the WWF. You had Savage, you had Steamboat, you had Santana, you sometimes had Greg Valentine. They don't do technical matches in the 80s in the WWF. Everything about this match is so perfectly placed. Everything. I don't care that Randy Savage is like, you know, meticulously planned everything out beforehand. it just works. It's beautiful, you know. Steamboat just fighting over arm drags. Even George Steele outside the ring doesn't ruin things for me. It's one of the greatest, most perfect matches of all time. That crowd, you know, those two guys were just interested in stealing the show. There was a much bigger match later in the night. I don't know if anybody's mentioning that later, so I'll leave that for now. Yeah, these two boys went out there and just stole the show and ripped the script up, frankly, for how a wrestling match in the WWF should be.
Yes, I still love that match, but somewhere Sean Kidd is groaning right now.
But he's really old, so he's going to groan anyway. Don't worry about that.
That's a given. So, Steve, you had as well on your list.
Yeah, Ben pretty much hit everything on the head. This is really where the term steal the show, I think, really originated, because when you look at WrestleMania 3, obviously the 93,000 people were drawn to the Pontiac Silverdome for the main events, but these two went out with the goal to make sure everyone remembered they had the best match of the night, and they definitely did. You know, some could argue that George Steele getting involved at the end, you know, hurts it a bit. I don't think it does. I still think it's a fantastic match, still a great, you know, great showing for both guys. And really, even though Steamboat won the title, Savage really came out the bigger star in the end, because, you know, a year later he becomes the world champions, and Steamboat's, you know, on his way out the door, but that's a, you know, for another time. But yeah, just a fantastic match, you know, all around. I mean, there's really not much more you could say about it.
Mm-hmm. Logan, you have anything to add about this match, even though you didn't have it on your list?
Oh no, yeah, it's just an absolute classic. It's definitely the best match, I think, of the 80s to that period in the WrestleManias that had happened. So yeah, just an absolute classic. I'm kind of lower on it, kind of like, I'm not as low as Sean is, but I'm kind of lower on it than some people. So I definitely understand why it's on some people's list, because it is a great match.
Mm-hmm. All right, we'll stay with you, Logan. Give us another entry on your list.
I gotcha. All right, so I picked one opener already, so I'm going to go with the actual greatest opener of all time, and I'm going to go with Owen Hart versus Bret Hart. Kind of like we talked about with Austin and Bret at 13, how their match at Survivor Series was kind of a technical classic. This is like a technical masterpiece. They just trade hold for hold the whole time, and it has the absolutely most perfect ending, how Owen just kind of reverses the victory roll and catches him, and it kind of surprises him, but they just go toe-to-toe the whole time. They lock in the sharpshooter on each other, and it's just one of the most absolutely awesome matches of all time, and I think it's probably the best opener of a pay-per-view ever, and definitely the best Mania opener of all time, but I just love it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, great match. Steve, it was an honorable mention for you.
Yeah, I mean, again, Logan is right on everything. It is a fantastic match. The build was really good. They started at Survivor Series, and then it, you know, really kicked, you know, hit the apex at the Rumble when, you know, Owen kicked Bret's leg out from his leg. and going into the match, you figured it was just going to be, okay, you know, they're probably have a good match, but Bret's probably going to get the win, cause you know, he's going on to get the, you know, get the title shot later in the night. And they just, I think, Bret wanted to really make Owen look great and prove that Owen could be a big star. And Owen kept up with him every step of the way, because you could argue that, you know, 94 was probably one of Bret's best years in ring. And a huge shocker there at the end, not just Owen winning, but winning clean. Like, he didn't cheat. He didn't hold the tights. He didn't grab the ropes. He out-wrestled the Excellence of Execution. And I think he made a big statement that night that proved he was legit and would set the tone for the rest of the year. And, you know, we would see it lead up to their great cage match at SummerSlam. So, yeah, just a fantastic match. And like you said, it's up. It's, you know, one could argue Brian Triple H's may have surpassed it as the best opener in Mania history, but it's definitely still one of, if not the greatest openers in WrestleMania history.
Mm-hmm. All right. Ben, it was an honorable mention as well for you.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with Logan. It is the best opener in WrestleMania history. Couple of things I love about it. First of all, before the match even starts, the ring announcer makes this big deal. It's totally silent. And he goes, ladies and gentlemen, from Calgary, Alberta, Canada, and the crowd erupts, and then Owen's music hits. It's mm-hmm. one of the greatest music cues in WWF history. Mm-hmm. And like the boys have said, it is a technical masterpiece. Owen still plays the whiny heel, you know, playing the younger brother who's getting the better of Big Brother. You know, the whole, you know, with his wooing when he's basically won a lockup is tremendous. And like Steve says, he never cheats once in the match. He wins clean as a sheet, 1-2-3, because he's out-wrestled his brother. Yeah. And then he can use that to take him all the way through the summer, all the way to SummerSlam. You know, it's perfect booking WrestleMania 10. You know, Brett loses the first match, wins the title, but he could never beat his brother on that one night.
Yeah, it was tremendous. So I was surprised when Owen won that match as well. I remember watching that.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Steve, give us another entry on your Mount Rushmore Mania matches.
Okay, well, I'm going to go with probably the most emotional match in WrestleMania history, and that's, of course, the career-threatening match from WrestleMania 7, Ultimate Warrior, Randy Savage. Really, you know, started at the end of 90 when Savage was constantly asking for a title shot when Warrior was still champion. Warrior kept, you know, giving him the runaround in essence, and then Savage cost him the belt at the Rumble, and eventually led to both men putting their careers on the line in this match. And what we get is just 20 minutes of great wrestling. I mean, Savage is, you know, was at his best at this on this night, and as we, you know, as often said, when the lights shine brightest, Warrior always brought it. And you know, you have some of the great moments, like Savage hitting the five elbows and Warrior barely kicking out of that. And then Warrior hitting the gorilla press and the splash, and then Savage kicking out of that. And then Warrior has that moment where he's like talking to the gods. He's, you know, not sure what to do. And then he finally, you know, he gets his answer. He ends up winning. But I think more when you ask people about the match, they talk more, not so much of the match itself, but the post-match with Elizabeth coming out of the crowd, clearing Sherry out of the ring, and her and Savage reuniting. And just the absolute perfect culmination to the story of Savage and Elizabeth, to the point that, you know, you've done something right where you got fans, not just women, but men crying their eyes out in the crowd because they've been so emotionally invested in the storyline. And it's just such an amazing moment. If that was really Savage's last moment, he could not have gone out on a higher note. And so I think, it's definitely still one of the greatest matches in WrestleMania history and one of the greatest moments in WrestleMania history.
Oh, yeah, it was tremendous. Of course, it also made Ben's list. Ben, talk about the match.
I watched it earlier on tonight just in preparation for this, and I don't know if any of you have watched it like recently. The thing that I took away from it that I didn't realize, and it's not to the match detriment, it's still fantastic, is how slow it is. For two guys that are, you know, known for their rough and tumble, you know, manic maniac run to the ring, you know, watch it again. Every move matters. Every little punch and kick matters. Like Steve says, you know, Savage hitting the five elbows off the top and he still can't get the win. I still don't know how weird Bob Heenan can see Elizabeth from his position, but, you know, we'll leave that by the by. And the aftermatch is, you know, so the match itself is probably, you know, 4.5 stars, but this is one of those matches. It's not about star rating. It's about the culmination of 6 years in that one moment. You know, it's one of the great Gorilla Monsoon calls, you know, what a woman and what a man, and just everything about it. It still gives me goosebumps now talking about it.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, tremendous moment. Logan, didn't make your list, but you have any thoughts to add?
This is definitely, if I hadn't put Brian Triple H on here as a kind of a personal pick, this definitely would have been my fourth one for sure. So this is like the first one that missed it for me, but absolutely great match, super emotional, has everybody in the crowd crying. It's great at the end when Liz and Savage get back together. But yeah, just an absolutely great WrestleMania moment and a great match to top it off. So I definitely understand why it's on both guys' lists.
Mm-hmm. All right. Ben, finish off your Mount Rushmore and Mania matches.
Wow, I've only got one left. We are fast forwarding a few years to 2009, and it is the match from WrestleMania 25 between Shawn Michaels and The Undertaker. Now, here's a thing for you. So you've got one competitor who's retiring in a year's time. The other guy is basically at this stage 1 year away from going into once a year matches. And they put on a it's not just a great match, it's a wrestling clinic. Everything about this match works for me. You got the bit at the beginning with the entrances, you know, Sean coming down from the heavens, Taker rising up from the from hell, basically. And the match is just, it's just tremendous. I can't say any more about it, particularly for that time period as well, where, you know, we aren't quite in the NXT Indie-tastic range yet. We're still in that, you know, mid to late 2000s where, you know, there's a lot of malaise and a lot of boredom going around. These two guys for 30 minutes absolutely went out there. They knew the show was going to be theirs. You could argue the match should have been main evented, particularly with Triple H and Randy not having a stipulation on it. And I could watch them two wrestle all day.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, it was tremendous. Logan, it was on your list as well.
Yeah, just two of my absolute favorite guys. And like Ben said, it was just an absolute classic. The kind of theme of light versus dark, kind of how Shawn Michaels came from the heavens and Undertaker came from hell, just made it all the more awesome. But yeah, the two guys just trade shot for shot for, you know, almost 30 minutes. And the ending where he tries to do the moonsault and Taker catches him and just tombstones him and finishes him off is just one of the best finishes that there's ever been. But yeah, like I said, these are two of my favorite guys. Sean's my favorite guy, so I had to have one of his matches on here, and I think this is his best for sure, and this match is just an absolute classic, and I love it.
Yeah, the two guys that were like probably the longest tenured, you could probably say, because Hogan, mm-hmm. You know, you could argue about Hogan, but Hogan is time, he didn't have as long a time, you know. Sean was injured but came back, and there are so many incarnations, as we will discuss on the upcoming episode of Evolution with Callum McDougal, she plugged, but yeah, I mean, Taker was just there. He was the man. He was the loyal guy. You know, Brett was great for his time. Austin, but they didn't have as long a time, longer runs. They didn't have, you know, amazingly didn't have the impact that Taker did.
There's one flub in the match, which it doesn't even involve, you know, involves, you know, a guy pretending to be a cameraman outside. It's not really involving the two of them. And like Logan says, that finishing sequence, everything is just a smooth, fluid motion, which is, you know, it's kind of like watching like AJ Styles, you know, everything just smooth, everything just flows. It's fantastic.
And of course, Steve had it on his as well. So Steve, anything you want to add to this conversation?
Yeah, I mean, I think they knew they were wanting these two to get together because we had seen them kind of build it up a bit. You know, they were the last two in the 2007 Rumble. Then they started the 2008 Rumble. So I think they kind of set the stage for a possible match between the two. But you never really thought it was going to happen, especially since they were both on separate brands at that time. And then when they, you know, kind of got it started in late February and like you said, the whole light versus dark and, you know, and it really got you pumped up for it. And like you said, the entrances are amazing. Sean coming down from the heavens and Taker rising up from hell. And then, you know, like you guys said, they just put on an absolute 30-minute wrestling clinic that you never would have expected at that point in these guys' careers. Like I said, Taker, you know, nearly, you know, almost killing himself on that dive. Just so much, you know, so fluid. And I know Ben said, you know, they probably in the end should have been the main event, but I honestly don't think anyone expected them to have the match they did. So I can understand why they had the match where it was. Obviously, like I said, revisionist thinking maybe should have been the main event, but yeah, just an absolute perfect of a WrestleMania match as you can get for two guys that at that point in their careers really didn't need to do that, but they just went out and, you know, stole the show and put on a match that you can argue it's probably one of the greatest, it's been the greatest WrestleMania match of like the last 10 years.
Mm-hmm. All right. Very good. Amazingly, that is everybody's Mount Rushmore's great minds to go like, but there are a lot of honorable mentions to talk about. So Steve, give us one of your honorable mentions.
Okay. Well, I'm going to go back to WrestleMania 10. The other epic match on that show, and that's, of course, Razor Ramon and Shawn Michaels in the ladder match for the Intercontinental title. Even though it wasn't the first ladder match the WWF did, of course, they had the match with Brett and Shawn back in 92 that everyone, I think, that not many knew about at the time. This was the one that really set the template for what we would see in future ladder matches that other guys would eventually build on. The feud was really good. You had, you know, Sean getting suspended, Razor winning the title, and then Sean coming back with his belt, saying he was still champion. So this was the, you know, perfect way to blow it off. There was no going to be no doubt who was the true Intercontinental champion. And they both just went out and put on a really fun match. And this is where Sean became Mr. WrestleMania with this match. And I think Razor doesn't get enough credit for the work he put into the match, because he took some stiff shots with that ladder. And then Sean, of course, doing some of the great, you know, dives off it, the, you know, the big splash and that stuff. So I think, you know, just missed the cut for me, but still belongs up there as one of the greatest matches of all time.
Yeah, yeah. Ben, you had as an honorable mention as well.
Yeah, it's one of the greatest and most influential matches of all time, Andy. Like Steve says, it's not the first ladder match. It's nowhere near the first ladder match. But what it is the most widely seen ladder match. And the two of them showed exactly what you can do in that kind of match, in that kind of environment. And yeah, Sean makes his reputation, but don't sleep on what Razor did in that match, are they? He's, you know, he's not just a body in that match, but like a lot of people say. You know, there'll be another one of my honourable mentions in a little bit we'll talk about. But yeah, this set the table for ladder matches for years and decades to come. In fact, you know, if we're not, you know, the ladder matches of today would not happen if it wasn't for this match.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Logan, you didn't have as an honourable mention, but do you have anything you'd like to add about the match?
Nah, yeah, just everything the boys have said. It's just crazy that it happened at the time that it did. You just didn't see matches like that, and you know, the two guys just went out there and killed it. They set the template of what a great ladder match can be, and you know, WrestleMania 10 is one of those kind of underrated favorites of mine that you know, I always like to go back and watch during this time of year. So yeah, it's just an absolutely great match. They have another one a couple years later at SummerSlam, which is equally as great. So yeah, just great match all around.
All right. Ben, give us another honorable mention.
Okay, let's go back again to WrestleMania 3, and you've got to talk about the main event. And it's Hulk. I don't even need to say it's Hulk versus Andre. It's the main event. I don't really think there's much to say because the match isn't that great. But like you said at the beginning of the show, Andy, that's not necessarily what this is about, is it? It's about what that match meant, and it was a match that got 90,000 people into a stadium. They weren't there to see anything else. They were here to see these two, you know, a guy who was claiming he hadn't been defeated in 10 years versus the guy who'd been the champ for 3 years. Well, I can't remember the exact line, but, you know, Jesse Ventura says something like, this is the biggest night in the history of wrestling. And he isn't joking at that point. That isn't hyperbole. This is the biggest match, and like I say, it is the main event.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just the image of just them, you know, Hogan just doing his Hogan thing, looking up at him, and Andre just stoic, just staring him down, not showing any emotion. And just, yeah, that being in that huge crowd, you have the WrestleMania carts. Yeah, it's just everything. It's just the moment just you never thought you were going to see. Because, yeah, Hogan went against bigger guys, but he never faced Andre. It was unthinkable for Andre to be a heel. I just finally got to see the Andre documentary, and the way they chronicle everything leading into this match is tremendous. Logan, any thoughts to share on Hogan Andre?
Just a great moment. Just two titans facing up against each other. You know, the irresistible force versus the immovable object, and all that stuff that Gorilla says. Just it's more of a moment that these two titans are going up against each other. The match, you know, like Ben said, isn't all that great, but just the thought of those two guys going up against each other was just such a huge moment, such a huge thing at that time period, and it made for a great show, obviously.
All right. Steve, you have anything to add?
Yeah, they pretty much said it best. It wasn't a match. It was a spectacle. It was the main event, you know, like I said, and the build for it was awesome, with Andre finally turning and hooking up with Bobby, and, you know, Hogan putting the belts on the line. And like you said, 93,000 people went to Pontiac Silverdome to see that match. And without it, we wouldn't be here today talking about the WrestleMania with such reverence if that match had not succeeded. And just a great, great spectacle, great moments, and just, you know, it's really not much more you can say about it.
Mm-hmm. All right. Steve, another one of your honorable mentions.
Okay, I am going to go to one of my, probably my all-time favorite show of all time. That's WrestleMania 17. I had two matches from here that made my list. The first one is the second TLC match, Edge and Christian, Hardys and Dudleys. They had set the bar the previous year in that great triangle ladder match. They raised it again at SummerSlam with the first TLC, and they raised it again here with the second one. Just absolute great moments in the match. Jeff, you know, hitting the Swanton off the big ladder. Obviously, the one everyone remembers, Edge hitting the spear on Jeff off the giant ladder. And I think what really sets this match apart is the inclusion of Spike, Rhino, and Lita helping their respective teams try to win. And it just really capped off this great year from 2000 to 2001, where the tag division really felt so amazing, like it had back in the late 80s. And these three teams, you know, were at the forefront of it. And really, I don't think we've seen, at least to this point, the tag division be as great as it was here. And I think these three teams deserve a lot of credit for making tag wrestling so big, like, for that year's stretch.
Hmm. Yep. I totally agree. Ben, that was also one of your honorable mentions.
Yeah. First of all, Steve, yes, WrestleMania 17 is the best WrestleMania. So, you know, well done for saying that. But
wrong.
Shut up, you're not on yet.
If you'd like to hear more of this great stuff, tune into the specials that have been dropping on Network, where the great WrestleMania 17 versus 19 debate continues on. All right, Ben, go ahead.
I wish I'd known about that, because I would have loved to have been on those, because I do love 19, but yeah, I'm more on the 17 part of that argument.
Wrong.
No, it's
I'm just gonna say one thing, and I love you, Logan, but there's not one match from 19 on anybody's list in honorable mentions. Just say I am impartial. Just saying, that's all. I mean I'm just seeing what I say, seeing, you know, way in the fact that's all I'm saying.
Can I just get a spoon for Andy to keep stewing that cup with?
consistent.
Anyway, Ben.
Yes, the TLC 2 match. So they take everything from 7 years ago that Shawn raised it. They take things from the year before, like Steve says, and then they just raise that bar, and it's just how far can you keep going? There's all the iconic images. I personally love the fact that Rhino, Lita, and Spike are all involved in it. And it's just, as we've just mentioned, we watched it a couple of weeks ago, and even 20 years on, it is still amazing. It still leaves your drool dropping, and you wonder quite how, you know, they didn't all retire in 2003, never mind like 2011, 2013.
What happened, Ben? Did you for a second?
British internet.
Logan was like, I'm cutting him off. I'm done hearing about that.
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah,
we got you.
You may carry on with your rant.
All right. No, I was just, I don't know where we got up to, but I was just saying, like, I loved how it just built off the other matches, like the TLC 1, the triangle ladder match, even picking stuff up from, you know, the ladder match from No Mercy 99. And it just built and built and built. And it was like, how far can we raise that bar? And boy, did they raise that bar high. You know, it blows my mind that 20 years on, one of them's going to be in a world title match at WrestleMania. One of them's, you know, in AEW. Well, two of them are in AEW, doing quite well for themselves. And there's only really Devon who's retired at this point. It's just madness, the actual strain and craziness they put on their bodies.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Logan, do you have anything to add about this?
No, I absolutely love this match. I do prefer the SummerSlam match just a little bit more. The interference is what kind of takes me out of this one, but I do like that each team has a guy that can come help and help them at the same time. But I like the SummerSlam match a little bit more just because it doesn't have the all the interference and stuff. But yeah, just an absolutely great match. And if you listen to that podcast, I actually did give it 4.75. So I do love this match. And 17 is a good WrestleMania. It's just not the best.
Okay, Ben, give us another one of your honorable mentions. British internet again.
British
internet. He's on mute, I think.
Sorry. I was just going to say Logan's going to love me for this pick if he didn't love that one from Steve, because we are also going to stay with WrestleMania 70 and we're going to go for the main event of that show between The Rock and Steve Austin. And because I haven't got drunken ranting Sean Kidd with me on this pod, I can talk quite freely about it. It's just a tremendous, tremendous match. You know, Sean's big gripe about it is, oh, it's just punching and kicking, that's all they do. Well, so do Bret Hart and Steve Austin, that's all they do. So yeah, it's all a lot of wrestling is punching and kicking. You know, it's not, we're not technical masterpieces all the time. Austin and The Rock have got that crowd again in the palm of their hand. I love the ending. I know a lot of people don't like the ending with Vince. Just go back to that SmackDown where Rock says, I will do anything to win that title, and anything includes making a deal with the devil. I described Hogan and Andre as the main event. Rock and Austin is my main event, my generation's main event. Mm-hmm.
Of course, Steve also had it as an honorable mention.
Yeah, this is not only is 17 my favorite show of all time, this is my favorite match of all time. I love this match. These two are so, they're like peanut butter and jelly. They're so good together, no matter what they do. Yeah, just such a great, you know, great build with, you know, they did kind of soil it a little bit. I don't think they should have had Deborah involved. I think the match could have sold its, you know, obviously sells itself, but you know, that aside, you know, so much great stuff between them. Obviously, like Ben mentioned, that interview they did where Austin said, you know, I need to beat you, Rock. I need to beat you more than anything in this world. And they just went out and annihilated each other. You know, the crowd was obviously very pro Austin, you know, no shock being in Texas. Though Rock had a few of his supporters too. I know the ending, like Ben said, the ending kind of divides people. I don't have a big issue with it. You know, you could argue maybe they could have done it. They shouldn't have done it in Texas, where Austin's not going to get booed no matter what he does. But it's still just a fantastic match. It's still my, like I said, my favorite of all time, and just a great capper to a fantastic show. And that was I mentioned her about how like Bret Austin from 13 sown the seeds for the Attitude Era. This was the peak of the Attitude Era, and it would not get better than this.
All right. Logan, anything to add?
Overrated. Overrated. No, I'm just playing. I mean, I don't like it as much as everybody else is, but it's all on the finish. I'm one of those people that the finish hurts me hurts it for me a little bit. So, yeah, it's a great match. The stuff with Vince and the chair stuff at the end just kind of takes me out of it a little bit. I can't really describe it. It's just something that, like, it goes on a tad too long after all that happens, so I just, it's something about that takes me out of it. But it is a great match on a great show, so I won't completely talk shit about it, but so a little bit of it does take me out of it just a little bit from being like an all-timer, you know.
All right, just a few more to go, and then we'll take a break. Steve, you got another honorable mention to throw out there?
Yeah, I do. I want to go a year later to WrestleMania 18, and another match that I don't think anybody ever expected would happen, but then we got it, you know, kind of out of nowhere. And that's, of course, The Rock and Hollywood Hulk Hogan. That was basically supposed to be the equivalent of Hogan Andre back at 3. Not quite as big, but just really just as memorable. You know, Hogan came back as part of the NWO, and you know, the big rumor was that we were going to get Hogan and Austin, but that ultimately didn't happen. We got Hogan Rock instead. And honestly, I think it was probably for the better, because I think that these two put on such a... The match itself may not be the best in-ring, but much like Hogan and Andre, this was all about the atmosphere, the crowd was just amazing for this match. Everything Hogan did, they popped. And it was so jarring to see that this guy who came in as a heel and he was supposed to be the bad guy, Rock's supposed to be the favorite, and the crowd just was like, nope, Hogan's our guy. We don't care about Rock. We're going to, you know, cheer everything this guy does. And Hogan, you could see during the match, was trying to do everything to get the crowd to boo him, and they just were not having it. And just such an amazing atmosphere, you know, amazing match. And, you know, Hogan eventually, you know, turning face at the end, shaking Rock's hand, and then Hogan Rock fight off Hall and Nash, and then Hogan poses for the crowd and basically completes his face turn. Just absolutely amazing. And much like Taker Shawn 7 years later, you know, you argue that, you know, this should have been the main event instead of Triple H Jericho. And yeah, just such an amazing match. And just, there's really not much more to, that I can say about it.
Yeah. It's been a while since I've seen it, but I absolutely love this match. I was 14 when Hogan Andre took place. So 15 years later, 29 years old, Andy, watching this with his buddies, I felt like I was 14-year-old Andy again. That's how much that match drew me in, and I had no idea what was going to happen, like where they were going to go with the finish and everything like that. And they had me in the palm of their hands, which speaks to like such, you know, a great, not the best match in between the ropes, but just the moment, the storytelling, everything was great. The lead up was tremendous. I believe we had one of The Rock's greatest promos. Was that when he meets the NWO, I believe, was leading up to this whole thing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was at No Way Out.
I love that. That is one of my favorite Rock, you know, just insults of all time. You know, hey, you, Razor, Chico, hey, and you give it to your buddy Big Daddy Cole. You know, you hand it to him. You hand it to Hogan. Ben, you have anything to add about this match?
All I will say is, and you guys just said it, pretty much not a great match, but who cares? It's not meant to be a great match. It's all about the Toronto crowd and the fact that their charisma and the fact that they're larger than life just carries them through the match. It's the one of the most amazing crowd reactions I've ever heard and seen.
Logan, any thoughts?
Yeah, I was saying it's all about the crowd. Like you said, it's not maybe the greatest match in between the ropes, but just the two guys were the two, you know, absolute icons in the sport at that point, and they were so over, and the crowd just went wild for everything that they did. And yeah, it actually kind of gave Hogan a babyface run that nobody was really expecting. He actually got a title run out of it. So yeah, just an absolute great moment. Should have definitely main evented that show, and you know, it shows because it's on the cover of the poster for that WrestleMania. It's Hogan and Rock. It's not Triple H and Jericho. So it shows you what they thought was the most important match for sure.
Thankfully, talking about a non-controversial WrestleMania 18. It's right in the middle of them. It's great. All right. Give us your last honorable mention, Ben.
Last one from me. We are going forward 3 years to WrestleMania 21. A dream match. A match and a true dream match, because these guys were on separate shows. They never had any interaction until about 2 months before this. I think at the Royal Rumble, I think, was the first time. I am talking about Shawn Michaels and Kurt Angle. And again, I'm using this word a lot tonight, another masterpiece. And this is a wrestling masterpiece. Shawn is able to keep up with Kurt pretty much all the way. This match only really has two. I only have two problems with this match. One is the Angle slam on the outside that clearly misses the ring post by about a foot. And two, the fact that Shawn's ankle is seemingly made of titanium, because he's in that ankle lock for about 5 minutes before he taps. But those two spots aside, that's just me nitpicking. I could watch these two go all day. It was absolutely fabulous.
Mm-hmm. Logan, any thoughts on this match?
Yeah, just everything Ben said. Just a great match between two absolutely awesome guys, a wrestling clinic, kind of like a couple of the other matches we've talked about tonight. But yeah, just an absolute masterpiece in ways. And yeah, I kind of agree with Ben. Those couple things are kind of take you out of it a little bit. But I mean, everything else in between all those spots is awesome and great. So yeah, definitely a good honorable mention.
Steve, anything to add?
Yeah, those guys pretty much summed it up. It's just a great, great matchup. You wondered how if Sean would be able to keep up with Kurt, and he did. And they just went out there and put on a phenomenal match. Really, they went in with the mindset to steal the show, even though they were one of the highlight matches of the card. But I think they did a hell of a job in doing so.
Mm-hmm. All right. And Steve, the last honorable mention of the night.
All right, well, we already mentioned the first match between these two, so I figured I would have the rematch on here, and that's, of course, Undertaker and Shawn Michaels from WrestleMania 26. Of course, this was the streak versus the career. They started the build in December when Shawn, started asking for a rematch, and Taker kept refusing, and eventually got to where Shawn cost him the world title to kind of give him a little incentive to get revenge, and then Taker was like, all right, I'll fight you, but I want your career on the line since I'm putting the streak on the line. And one of the greatest lines Shawn has ever said when he said, if I can't beat you at WrestleMania, I have no career. Just so intense. And at that moment, I think many probably figured Shawn was going to lose, though there was still that slight doubt that maybe he could pull it off. And maybe, again, the match itself, just tremendous. Maybe a slight notch behind the previous match, but so much great stuff in there. And a great ending where Shawn basically tells Taker to finish him, and Taker does, and Shawn gets the great send off from the crowd, and just a fantastic match, and probably one of the not at the same level as the first match, but definitely up there as one of the greatest of all time in terms of WrestleMania.
Ben, you have anything to add?
Yeah, main event for WrestleMania that doesn't get the love it deserves. I'm like Steve says, it's a notch behind 25, but it's still really, really good. That, I spoke about it when we were on Special Relations last year, and I said about matches and moments. I said this match is the match with the slap, and it's Shawn when doing the throat slit and then the slap in one last defiant gesture before Taker puts him away. That ending is just perfect for me. That was like the perfect ending to that guy's career, and the rebel, one last time going out on his sword.
Mm-hmm. All right, Logan, anything they had in the end?
Yeah, I'm gonna agree with Ben. The ending is perfect. Like both guys said, this is a notch below the 25 match, but it's awesome just the same as that one before was. He kind of slaps him and, tells him to kind of finish him, and he hits the, leaping tombstone, which is just adds that extra little bit on it and finishes him off. But just a great send-off for Michaels. Two great WrestleMania matches in a row for him. So, just an absolutely awesome match.
All right. Well, that's going to bring it close to our first half of the first wrestling episode of Making Mount Rushmore. Guys, off to a tremendous start coming out of the gate swinging. When we come back, we're going to talk about what happens after WrestleMania, more specifically the night after, which has become as huge as WrestleMania. Well, maybe not as huge, but you know what I mean. We're going to talk about those Raw after Mania moments. What are the greatest ones and deserve their place on their Mount Rushmores? With Ben Locke, Steve Riddle, and Lauren Crosland, I'm Andy Atherton. Making Mount Rushmore Wrestling. We'll be right back. Place to Be Nation Wrestling Network. Welcome back to Making Mount Rushmore Wrestling Edition number one. I am Andy Atherton here with Ben Locke, Steve Riddle, and Lauren Crosland. We've broken down the guys' Mount Rushmores of Mania matches. Now They're going to give us their Mount Rushmores of Raw after Mania moments. And we're going to start with Ben this time. Ben, give us your first entry on your Mount Rushmore of Raw after WrestleMania moments.
Okay, I am going to go back to 2008. And it's the night after WrestleMania 24. And it's the night after Ric Flair has lost his career-threatening match to Shawn Michaels. And they basically clear the last 20 minutes, half an hour of Raw to let Flair... Well, Flair thinks he's coming out just to say what the hell he wants to know, say goodbye to the crowd and all this. And then Triple H comes out and, you know, Flair starts getting quite emotional at that point. And it's not just Triple H who wants to come out and say hello to him. There's all these guys from the 80s, the past and the present. So you get the whole Four Horsemen there with Arn and Barry and Tully and JJ. Harley Race is there. And the current stars of today. So you get the, you know, the Jerichos, the Shawn Batista there. They're planting the seeds there for what's happened to further what's their feud, what's going to happen in 2008. And Rick, we all know watching Ric Flair, he's quite an emotional guy at the best of times. And he's basically broken down and gone by the time the second guy comes out. Never mind by the time the 20th guy comes out. And then the thing that we don't see after the cameras go off air, so all the, you know, all the wrestlers are out showing their appreciation to Flair, and then you get the gong and you get the Undertaker coming out, you know, to show his respect, and that's something he just never did. And the final one of all, of course, is Vince, who, you know, comes out from Gorilla, and it's just an amazing, beautiful moment. And if Flair had just stopped right there, that would have been the absolute perfect full stop to his career. Sadly, he didn't. We all know that, but let's just pretend that TNA, you never went to TNA, and we'll just end his career at that very point, because it don't get any better than that.
All right. Steve, you had this moment on your Mount Rushmore as well.
Yeah, just an absolute amazing moment. Just, you know, Flair coming out, you know, giving his showing his appreciation for the fans and wanting to say goodbye. And then, like Ben said, you get this, you know, all these guys come out, Triple H first. And then I think the coolest part was seeing the Horsemen come out, like you said, Arn, Tully, Barry, and JJ, and seeing them reunited. Like, and just seeing all these guys, you know, Steamboat, Harley, and Malenko, and the current guy, Cena, Batista, Jericho, Shawn, him and Flair having their little like moments with showing off the watches, and having them the rest of the roster come down, and just this, and here, and of course the thing that puts, you know, really makes it all together is you hear is that song from Fuel, "Leave the Memories Alone," which they played a lot that, you know, in those weeks, you know, as they were hyping up, you know, looking back at Flair and his career and all that stuff, and having his family there, and seeing, you know, Charlotte, and before she was Charlotte, and seeing David and Reed and, you know, all of them. And like Ben said, you know, the stuff after the camera shut off, when Taker came out and him showing his respect to Flair, and Vince coming out, and, you know, him and Flair embracing, and just such a great send off. And it, like Ben said, it was the perfect send-off for Flair if he had stayed retired, and unfortunately he didn't, as we all know. But just still goes down as one of the greatest moments in the history of Monday Night Raw. Post-WrestleMania or not, it's still up there.
Mm-hmm. All right. Logan, anything to add on this?
Leave the memories alone. no, it's a great moment. I think the fact that he does come back in TNA kind of takes it down for me, but it is a great moment, a great show of respect from all the guys in the locker room, and it's great to see all those guys come out and kind of embrace him. So it is a great moment for sure.
Mm-hmm. All right. Steve, give us another entry on your Mount Rushmore.
Okay, I am going to jump 5 years ahead to 2013, and of course I'm talking about Dolph Ziggler cashing in his Money in the Bank contract on Alberto Del Rio and winning the World Heavyweight Championship. Easily the highlight of Dolph's career. The crowd was just so amazing there. Like, Del Rio just had that match with Jack Swagger, and he was, you know, selling the knee injury, and it was like the perfect setup for Dolph to come out. You're just waiting and waiting. The crowd's getting so antsy. They're like, we want Ziggler, you know, and, you know, everyone had thought he was going to do it the night before at Mania, but he ends up doing it here. And, you know, they have a fairly quick match, you know, that one brief moment where you almost thought when Del Rio got the cross arm breaker on, you thought, oh shit, they're going to have Dolph, you know, bust out on his cash in, but he escapes and hits the zigzag and gets the win, and just the huge pop he gets, and you just feel so great for him. He had been building himself up throughout 2012, and you really thought that he was finally going to break out and be a star, and unfortunately, as we know, that didn't happen. He got hurt, I think, a few months later, and he ended up losing, and then he just kind of unfortunately mired back into obscurity where he is now. But just for that one moment, you thought that WWE had just found their next big star in him, and just such a great moment, and the, you know, one of the loudest pops I think you ever hear for somebody winning the world title. So I think that definitely belongs on the Mount Rushmore.
Yeah. I mean, I love this moment so much. It just, the crowd is just waiting for it. And it's New Jersey, you know, it's the Meadowlands, which is a shit arena, but it's a horrible arena. I mean, I have not been to the new one they built in Newark, which is about, I think, half an hour or so south of that. This is in the complex where they should just tear this building down by now. But, it's probably the best thing to happen there. I'm saying that as a Ranger fan, because the Devils used to play there. But no, it was so perfect. Yeah, and they give you that moment. He hits, I don't know if they ever gave it a name, but it was like Cody does it and calls it the disaster kick. And you think, and then he hits the armbar, and you think for a moment, because Dolph is flailing like a fish that was just like brought on board. And then he, you know, gets out of it and hits that zigzag. And just and the emotion though on his face with Big E and AJ as well, it just doesn't get better than that. Of course, Logan had on his as well.
Yeah, absolutely. The crowd just goes absolutely wild on this one, and that's what the takeaway from this is. It's sad that Ziggler's career didn't really pan out much after this, because he, like Steve said, he gets injured, I think, like, not even a month later. It's, like, right before the next pay-per-view, but, like, just the crowd goes wild and just wants Ziggler to win the title so bad. It would have been nice to see if he had stayed healthy how far he could have gone, because I think they even tried to kind of relight that push a couple of times in future years, but it just never seemed to work out. But like, this moment was just so huge, everybody wanted to see it happen. This was the crowd that did the fandangoing stuff and got that super over, so this Raw after Mania was just a huge moment, and awesome, and just a great moment all around.
And Ben had it as well.
Yeah, the crowd are absolutely molten for this. I don't know if it's a New Jersey thing or just the night after WrestleMania thing. I love the fact that they have the match and then he doesn't even come out straight away to do the whole injury angle with, and then he comes out about 2 minutes later. They just played it absolutely perfectly. And look at AJ and Big E's face. They can barely keep the smile off their face. They are basically marking out at that moment, and it is absolutely wonderful.
Yeah, I think it's a perfect storm, Ben, of night after Mania and a tri-state area crowd. I'm not going to give New Jersey all the credit. Sorry, Calvin. I'm not going to give New Jersey all the credit, because there's probably a shit ton of New Yorkers. You probably have. Well, it's also international crowd, because people come in, you know, for Mania. So it's just it's just a fever, though. It's. I mean, I don't know how many of you guys have ever seen a wrestling show in New York. I'm from the area. I mean, I grew up, 20 minutes outside Manhattan. So going to the Garden to see wrestling is something I grew up doing. And I've been to, you know, WrestleMania, Survivor Series, Rumbles, everything at the Garden. And there's just something about New York area, New York crowd that just heightens a lot of things. Okay, so Logan, give us another entry on your Mount Rushmore of Raw After Mania moments.
All right, so I'm going to go with the night after WrestleMania 14. I'm going to go with when Austin kind of comes out with his suit, kind of looking like he's going to choose to be like Vince's corporate champion, and then he kind of starts to shred it all off and kind of and ends up kind of turning on Vince and says he's going to choose the hard way of kind of dealing with being champion. He's going to go against Vince, and whatever Vince says, he's going to do it the hard way. He's going to do it his way. He's going to, you know, raise hell, drink beer, do whatever he wants. They kind of give him the new title that's going to be going on from there. But just a great moment, just kind of solidified Austin is like Austin McMahon as the rivalry for that time period, and that they were always going to clash against each other, and that Austin was always going to be get under Vince's skin, and that, you know, this was just going to be the rivalry for the time period that they were about to go into, and this really shot off the Attitude Era from here. So I had to choose it for my Mount Rushmore.
Yeah, probably the greatest feud in wrestling history is Austin McMahon. Mm-hmm. Ben, you had it as an honorable mention.
There's, I mean, the speech by Vince is just tremendous, and Logan just mentioned it. You know, you can do things the easy way, or you can do things the hard way. And we talked to the earlier on about great Steve Austin camera shots. This one also has another great one where you can just see the brain ticking, like, what's he going to do? You know, what should he do? And then he does the stunner about 30 seconds later. It just lays the groundwork for the next 3 years perfectly.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Steve had it as well as an honorable mention.
Yeah, just a, you know, great moment. Like you said, them debuting the new title, the Globe Belt, and, you know, Vince still trying to put this like facade that he's, you know, happy Austin's champion. Although, even though Austin kind of brings up how a few, you know, prior to Mania, Vince was asked if he wants Austin to win, and Vince does that. Oh, hell no, he doesn't want Austin as champion. And Vince tries to kind of play it off, and Austin's, you know, clearly not buying it. And then Vince kind of starts to turn, and that's when he says, you know, well, we can do it the easy way or the hard way. You're basically gonna do it my way anyway. You can either do it willingly, or I'm gonna force you. And like Ben said, that brief, you know, Austin's like thinking about it, you're wondering what he's gonna do, and then, you know, he gives Vince the stunner, and pretty much, like you said, kicks off one of, if not the greatest feuds in not just WWF but in wrestling history.
All right, back around to Ben. Give us another entry in your Mount Rushmore.
Okay, let's stick with the same night. Let's stick with 1998, and let's go for the debut, or the return, I should say, of Mr. Sean Waltman. This is obviously the night after WrestleMania. Shawn Michaels had his quote-unquote career-ending back injury at that point, so Triple H needed some help with DX, and he went out, and as he said, you call on your friends, you call on the click. Unbeknownst to the wide wrestling world at this point, had been that Sean Waltman had been let go by WCW. He was over there in six, of course, and he was really the first guy to jump back from the WCW to the WWF. There'd been plenty of people in those 2-3 years who'd done it the other way. He was the first guy to come back, and the interview he gives is, I will say, one of the best interviews of all time. He sort of rambles. There isn't like an Austin 316 line there, but, you know, he hits all the big points. He, you know, has rails against Hogan, rails against Bischoff, you know, says that Hall and Nash would be stood there right by him if they could get out the contract, but they can't. And it's not just, like I say, it's not just a great interview. It's the intent from the WWF that, you know, here we go. We've got a fairly big guy, big star here from WCW, and we've managed to sign him back to us. And, you know, that sort of continues into 99. And then obviously by that point, they've taken over the Monday Night Wars.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It kicks off the next generation of D-Generation X, where it becomes, you know, more than just, you know, Sean, Hunter and China. It becomes like a big full on faction, in my opinion. Logan had it as well on his list.
Yeah, I was just saying, it was the first guy to jump back from WCW, so it was a big deal, and it immediately made X-Pac a huge deal to start off with, and it kind of indoctrinate the New Age Outlaws at the end of the show when they had their cage match with Foley and Funk. So the just the whole formation of the new DX is just a great moment, and like I said, it makes X-Pac a huge deal, and it gives that little push to the New Age Outlaws as well, and makes them an even bigger deal as well. So just a great moment and a great formation of a faction to go on further and just like Ben said, win the war along with Austin and Rock and all those guys. Kind of won the war for WWE. So great moment.
Yeah, Steve had as an honorable mention.
Yeah, like the guy said, great moment. And really, even though he wasn't the first one to jump from WCW to WWF, Jeff Jarrett had beat him to that back in 97. This felt like a much bigger... I'm just playing. No, this was easily a much bigger deal because, you know, like you said, he had been a big, you know, a member of the NWO at six, and he had just been fired by Bischoff, and, you know, the guys there, like his buddies, Nash and Hall, were not happy about it, and the rumors were that they wanted to come as well, and Triple H, and they even, you know, X-Pac even mentions it in the promo that, you know, had they been willing to, been able to, Nash and Hall would be there with them, and like you said, this was the genesis of DX, as Triple H put it, because you watch that whole show, they don't mention Shawn at all at any moment. Like, besides Triple H kind of vaguely referencing him, you know, about how, you know, they shouldn't have trusted Tyson, and other than that, Shawn is not mentioned at all. And it's definitely a new era for the WWF. Like, we, you know, it started that night, you know, with Austin and Vince, and we see it here continue with X-Pac coming in, and at the end of the night, you know, the Outlaws joined DX and kind of finalized the group, and they, you know, go on throughout 98. But yeah, easily one of the biggest moments for the Attitude Era.
Jesus, could you imagine if Hall and Nash could get out of their contracts, what that would have happened? Holy Jesus. That would never have happened. Bischoff wasn't that stupid. All right, Steve, give us another one of your entries.
All right, I am going to jump ahead to 2012. The night after WrestleMania 28, John Cena comes out in the last segment. He talks about the match previous with The Rock where he lost, and he said that he wanted to, you know, Rock to come out and shake his hand so that he could say that Rock was the better man that night. Of course, Rock had been out earlier in the night, but you wondered if he was going to come out again. And there's, you know, the few minutes we're waiting. Cena's in the ring. The crowd's buzzing. Is Rock going to come out? And instead, to the shock of everyone, we don't get The Rock. Instead, we get The Beast. Brock Lesnar making his big return after being gone since 2004. Just absolutely amazing moment there. The crowd was so hyped. They popped so huge because they couldn't believe that, you know, here's the guy who walked out of the company 8 years ago. You know, I'm sure many probably thought he would never be back. And here he is. He gets in the ring. Cena is, you know, kind of stunned at first, but then he, you know, Brock offers a handshake. Cena goes to take it. And of course, Brock F5s him to a huge pop because everyone hated Cena at that point. And just an amazing moment, and began Brock's run, you know, run for better or worse, because he's had some, you know, ups and downs, but that one moment where he comes out and the place explodes, and you're like, okay, now things are starting to really get good with Brock coming back, and you were just waiting to see what he would do. And of course, it would lead first to him and Cena having that amazing match at Extreme Rules, and just like I said, set, you know, the course of the next years to come. So I think easily one of the greatest moments in Raw history is Brock's return.
Mm-hmm. Logan had it as well.
Yeah, like Steve said, it just was one of those moments that you never thought would happen. Like, once Brock left, he was kind of over, you know, pro wrestling, and he wanted to do something different. And he got into the UFC and was, very successful at that at the same time. So it was just one of those things that you never thought would happen again. And when his music hits, the place just goes absolutely ballistic. And there's that video of the guy that reacts, doing kind of his pose that is always on the, like, great moment videos of all time. But just a great moment. I'm not the biggest Lesnar guy, as I've said on many podcasts in the past, but this is an absolutely awesome moment, and it kind of starts what John Cena says is the worst year of his life, quote unquote. So he comes out and just wrecks Cena. So just a great moment, and it'll be one that'll always be remembered.
Ben had it as well on his list.
Yeah, this was my number one, it just happens to be the last thing we're going to talk about. It's one of my favorite moments in Raw history, never mind just the night after Raw. Like the boys have said, there was these little whispers that Brock was coming back, but you haven't heard anything for definite. You know, there were some people with crowds, you know, with signs in the crowd, still being smart. And I'm going to sound sexist, Andy, so I apologize. But, you know, we all know the wrestling fan is predominantly male. But we can go there, Colin. That's a reasonable thing to say. Mm-hmm. Listen to that crowd. It might as well have been a Justin Bieber concert when that guy comes out. That crowd is losing their shit because he left a star. He's come back as a mega star. It's just one of the most amazing moments. And one thing that none of you have mentioned is after the F5, we get the famous kicking of the cap, which is probably one of my favorite things in wrestling period, when he just kicks that cap out the ring. Yeah, and it leads to the match at Extreme Rules. And like Logan says, Cena has the worst year of his life when he main events every pay-per-view still.
All right. All right, one entry left to go. That's one of Steve, finish off your Mount Rushmore.
All right, for my last one, we are jumping ahead 2 years to 2014, and that is the return of the Ultimate Warrior to Monday Night Raw. He had been gone, of course, since 1996 when he got fired after no-showing some live events. And by that point, he was, you know, he had been on the outs with them. He had the brief run in, you know, WCW that's fairly forgettable. You know, he had, you know, then kind of moved on from wrestling, and then, you know, then he kind of came back in the spotlight in 05 when they released the self-destruction DVD, and he sued them, and, you know, you never thought that he would ever come back. But then, you know, thanks to Triple H, the wheels kind of got turning. He was featured in one of the video game commercials in 2013, and then it was announced he was going to be in the Hall of Fame for 2014 as the headliner. And he gives a great speech at the Hall of Fame. He's at WrestleMania. Then he comes out here on Raw, gives a, you know, he has the big, you know, with the big coat, and then he puts the mask on. He gives a very, at the time, what we thought, you know, kind of warrior-esque promo where he talks about how, you know, every man, you know, eventually breathes his last breath, his heart beats its final beat. And at the time, you're thinking nothing of it. You're thinking, oh, it's just, you know, a typical warrior promo. And it been revealed that he had just signed a contract, a Legends contract. So you figure he's going to be around, you know, quite a while, you know, doing guest appearances and all this stuff. But then, of course, then 2 days later, he tragically passes away out of nowhere, which completely threw everyone for a loop because he had, you know, just like, you know, no one had expected that. And then the kind of, you know, the word came out that, you know, he'd been feeling, not been feeling well. He thought maybe his time was going to come soon. So he wanted to get his wife and his daughters set. And he, that's why, that's partially why he made amends. And, you know, eventually went, like I said, went to the Hall of Fame. And obviously, as we would know, they would create the Warrior Award the next year in his honor. And his wife is still, I think, working for them in some capacity. But that was just a really cool moment seeing him come out after all that time being away and him cutting that promo. And it, you know, really was like he had never left. So I thought that that moment deserved a mention on my Mount Rushmore.
Logan, anything to add?
Yeah, I was there for his, I went to the Hall of Fame that year and saw his speech. It was a great speech, you know, and just, it was so eerie the whole week, or how it all ended out, how he ended up passing. But it, like with the promo on Raw that he made after Mania, just it ended up being kind of sort of eerie. Like he knew what was coming, but like he wanted to leave his last final mark on the WWE, and he wanted to, like, you know, keep himself in everybody's memory of, like, you know, the fact that he was a great superstar, and that, you know, what he felt inside is what he wanted everybody else to know, you know, feel about themselves. Like, you can do anything that you want to do if you believe in yourself. So just, it was kind of a weird situation just how it all worked out, but it was a great moment at the same time, and it's one that'll always stand out for me because I was at his Hall of Fame speech and I was at WrestleMania that year. So yeah, definitely a good moment for sure.
Amazing. You got to witness that. Ben, anything to add?
In a business full of, like, amazing stories, this one is one of the most amazing and tragic at the same time. like Steve said, you know, the fact that he was able to get all his finances in order and get, you know, his family sorted, you know, he knew what was coming. And it's extraordinary just looking back at it now with like 7 years of perspective. Like, you know, Logan obviously was there that night at the Hall of Fame, but everything about the speeches as this eerie, you know, obviously, you know, hindsight's a thing now. You can look back and see all these little things now, but it still blows your mind that it happened even in 2021.
Yeah. Just simply amazing. You can't write this kind of stuff. Really.
If somebody from Hollywood or said, or you know, oh, we've got this new show for Netflix, you wouldn't buy it because it's not believable.
No, it's just not saying it works out perfectly, but you know, it's just a story that, you know, you just, it ends the way it ends is just amazing. You know, in the span of just day, I mean, I'm sure they were working on negotiations for a while, but you know, to the fans' eyes, for what we saw, you know, it was only like a week. You know, it's mm-hmm. like, you know, he's at the Hall of Fame. They do the Hall of Famers at WrestleMania. He comes down Raw, and for a moment we get the Warrior back, and then passes away 2 days later. It's just literally like a week. All right, so let's go through some honorable mentions before we call it a day here. Ben, you want to give us one of yours?
Okay, I will go. This is the closest we're going to get to a WrestleMania 19 mention tonight, because we're going to the night after WrestleMania 19, where Goldberg makes his debut for the WWE and Spears the Rock. But obviously, they'd announced that they'd done the Goldberg promo during WrestleMania 19, and the crowd are already hit to the room when the Rock's doing his promo, because they're chanting Goldberg already, and he's thinking it's for his lawyer, Ira Goldberg, but it, of course, it isn't. So at the end, the Rock comes out, you know, rather than getting a beautiful Rock concert, we get the Spear, we get the You're Next and Spear, and it's just a tremendous moment.
Yeah. Love that, because, you know, he comes in and hey, Rock, who's next? You're next. And he just nails it. And the Rock sells it like, oh, my mm-hmm. God.
He does that thing when he's putting his head like, oh, yeah, oh, yeah, then you get speared to shit.
it was another momentum for Steve as well.
Yeah, like Ben said, you know, they did the vignette at WrestleMania, and they just said Goldberg's coming, and you weren't sure when we were going to see him. And like you said, you know, the night after, Rock's doing like the big Rock Appreciation Night, and like you said, the crowd's chanting Goldberg, and Rock great line is like, "Hey, don't think you're cool just because you know the Rock's accountant, Ira Goldberg." Okay, he's just one of his great lines. Rock in 2003 was absolutely amazing. That was one of his greatest characters ever. The whole heel Hollywood promo, you know, Hollywood character, and you know he goes on about how to say, you know, there's nothing left for him to do. He's gonna call it quits. And then Goldberg comes out to a huge pop. And like you said, you know, he just keeping it simple. He's like, you want to know who's next? Rock, you know who's next? You're next. And hits the spear and, you know, the great sell by Rock. And it, really a great feud right off the bat there for Goldberg on his coming in, the feud with the Rock. And a great way for Rock to go out and, you know, on his way out to kind of put Goldberg over. And, yeah, just a really awesome moment.
Yeah, they try to do similar with Dolph, it just didn't go over. Logan, anything to say about that? Well, he says, hey, Dolph, son, you're next. it just doesn't have the same gravitas. Logan, anything to add?
Yeah, well, this was a great moment after the better Rock Austin WrestleMania match. So, but yeah, Goldberg actually absolutely spears the crap out of him. It's a great moment with the whole accountant thing that he says about Ira Goldberg and all that. But yeah, you know, Goldberg was one of the ones that, you know, didn't come in for the invasion that I think really could have boosted that storyline a lot. So him finally coming in was just a great moment, and it really meant a lot that he was going toe to toe with the Rock right out of the gate.
Oh yeah, it's night and day of Goldberg as part of the invasion. Steve, give us one of your honorable mentions.
I'm going to go a year prior to 2002. I mentioned about Brock Lesnar returning in 2012. Well, I'm going to also mention his debut in 2002. He had, you know, been in OVW to that point, gaining some steam, and he had done the dark matches for the last year. You know, there was so much, you know, buzz about him when he was going to come in. And then the night after WrestleMania, we get this kind of innocuous hardcore match. I think it was Maven and Al Snow for the title. And at one point, you know, Spike comes in and, you know, they're doing the 24/7 and, you know, you're not thinking anything about it. But then this other guy comes in, you're not sure who he is. And then you kind of realize, holy shit, that's Brock Lesnar. And he just absolutely wrecks shop. He, you know, spine busters Snow on a trash can. He gives Maven the F5. And then the best part of it, you know, he catches Spike on his Hurricanrana, gives him just two absolutely vicious power bombs. And then, of course, the kicker to it is not only did he come out, but of course, he's got Paul Heyman by his side. And, you know, JR's just going nuts. He's like, what is that, you know, no good son of a bitch doing by his side? And, you know, and just, you know, Paul just raises Brock's hands. And you realize at that moment that you got a new star on your hands with how Brock looked. And it would just kickstart what would be an amazing 2002 for him. So just an absolutely amazing debut, a great moment, and just a great sign of things to come.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I saw Brock in a dark match at the Nassau Coliseum before Raw. Can't remember the exact date, but it. Sorry about that. not like a first night. Anyway, so I remember seeing him at the Nassau Coliseum, and I just like, what the hell is this? I mean, I had read about him a little bit, but to see this guy in action was massive. Logan, anything to add?
Yeah, I mean, he debuts and he's just an absolute unit. I mean, he's jacked and every muscle is, he's just ripped to shreds. And like, he just has the, you know, one of the best, like 6 months straight out of the gate and just dominates everything and ends up being champion after SummerSlam. So just, I mean, yeah, just the start of something that was going to end up being like a great summer and a great, you know, just a great first year for Brock. He completely dominates the scene and really shows up for sure. But yeah, great moment to see him that debut.
Ben, anything to add on Brock's debut?
Yeah, but like I think Steve mentioned it, the best part is JR and King's moaning about Heyman. That just always cracks me up, just that no good son of a bitch, what's he doing back and all that. And yeah, you could probably imagine the scene backstage that Vince has already counted the money that Brock's gonna make him.
All right. Ben, another one of your honorable mentions.
Okay, let's fast forward to 2010. So the moment I picked is Shawn Michaels' retirement speech. And what I like about it is obviously Shawn had spoken to Triple H or whoever backstage and said, I don't want what Flair had, because Triple H gets attacked earlier in the night by Sheamus. So kayfabe-wise, he's not available for any kind of, you know, respect given. But the moment I've picked is the moment where Taker comes out and doesn't say a word. It's just a simple nod of the cat of the hat. Yeah, that always gets me, always makes me quite emotional. Short speech is nice enough, but yeah, it's all about that Taker moment where they're looking, when they're eye to eye looking at each other from the ramp.
Mm-hmm. Steve, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, it was a really, you know, nice moment for Sean. Like Ben said, you know, Taker coming out, just, you know, doing the tip of the cap, you know, it was a nice little send-off. And then Sean giving a good speech. And I love how he ended it with kind of the quote that, you know, everyone used to say, like Bobby used to say and others used to say in 92, where it was like the heartbreak kid, Shawn Michaels, has left the building. And then kind of cool little moment there at the end where Triple H comes out and, you know, he hugs Shawn and they embrace and then he has the two, the DX glow sticks and leaves them on the stage. And, you know, really nice moment. Like you said, you know, Shawn didn't want a big, big send-off like Flair got, which was fine. That's just, you know, how Shawn was. It was, you know, he got to say his piece, had his little moment there with Taker, got his moment with Triple H. Again, you know, would have been great. It would have been a great send-off had Shawn not come out of retirement for the Saudi money, you know, 10 years later, but that's neither here nor there. But yeah, just a really cool moment for, and a great way to send off one of the best of all time.
Yep. Logan, anything to add?
No, I can't really add much. Yeah, just what the guy said. Great moment. My favorite wrestler of all time. Great to see him get a good send off. Kind of like Flair did, but he didn't have all the people come out like he did. But like Steve said, that's just how Shawn was. But he got his tip of the cap from Taker and his hug with his best friend. So just a great moment for an absolutely fantastic pro wrestler.
Mm-hmm. All right, Steve, another honorable mention of yours.
I'm going to jump to 1996, the night after WrestleMania 12, and that is the debut of Mick Foley as Mankind. We had been seeing the great vignettes in the weeks leading up, showing off this character, and you're not really sure what to make of him. And then he has his debut match against Bob Holly. It's pretty much a squash, but in that few moments, you see what kind of guy Mankind is, just this out of control, ruthless, reckless guy who doesn't care about his own body and his own pain. He just wants to hurt somebody else. And, at the time you think, okay, that's a decent debut, and you don't think much of it. But then, of course, later in the night, he comes out, he really makes a statement when he comes out and attacks The Undertaker during his match with Bradshaw. And that's when we know that Mankind's going to be a big guy, a big name, because he beats the shit out of Taker, does the great elbow off the apron, puts the mandible claw on him. And really, for the first time since 1990, Undertaker looks vulnerable to somebody. And, here's a guy who was, so different than some of the other guys Taker had feuded with over the years. Before he had feuded with like big guy, big giants who, no offense to them, but they weren't much like, Kamala, Gonzalez, Bundy, Mabel, and, just guys who were bigger than Taker, but really, at the end of the day, really posed no threat. Mankind was the first guy that actually posed a threat to The Undertaker. And we would see that, they had their great feud throughout 1996. And it all starts here on this night, the night after WrestleMania 12. So I just had to, I thought that was worthy of a mention.
Mm-hmm. Logan, anything to add on Mankind's debut?
Yeah, kind of like Steve said, it's just the first guy that really you thought could go toe to toe with Taker. I mean, he had the mind game part. He had the, he was just willing to do anything he could do to take Undertaker out. So yeah, just finally awesome to see somebody that was kind of his equal that would do anything he could to take him out. So yeah, great debut for Mick Foley.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Ben, anything to add?
Just that Rory and Callum told me to mention it, so I'm glad that Steve did, and he said everything beautifully. Like you said, they went from the monster of the week with Taker to a guy who was a believable threat to Taker, mm-hmm. which is All what right. he needed in 96.
All right, let's go with our final honorable mention of the night with Ben.
Okay, one last one for me. I'm going back to 2014. I'm going to Paige's debut and title win versus AJ Lee. Not the match, because the match is about a minute long. About a couple of minutes long. It's all right. It's more what it means and what it's meant going forward. It was the first real big NXT debut the night after WrestleMania. They'd obviously, filled some guys in. We've mentioned Big E already. Bray Wyatt was already in the WWE system at that point. It's more what she meant, and like I say, what she meant for NXT, what she meant for the whole women's evolution thing. And I think she's definitely worth a mention of this, because the crowd were hit to the room. They knew exactly who she was, and it's just a great moment. And it's a centerpiece of and I'm going to say it, Logan, the best WWE film that there is.
Yeah, well, I mean, amazing that was only 7 years ago, and she's been retired for how long due to injuries?
Years. She's not even 30 yet. She's not even 30 yet.
Wait, was she 19 when she came up? Was she 21?
21. Yeah, she was 21.
All right, so I mean, she's like 28 right now. She's been retired for a few years. Jesus. Steve, anything to add about Paige's debut?
Yeah, like Ben said, great moment and the first real big NXT debut for the night, the night after Mania. AJ had just come off that that Invitational the night before, where she pretty much beat everyone in the division at that point. You wondered who was going to be the next, you know, if there was anyone left to step up. And here comes Paige, and you know they have their their quick, you know, like I said, it's really quick. But there's just a moment of Paige finally ending AJ's reign as Divas Champion was just so big and so momentous for her, and it really, like I said, kind of sowed the seeds for the. What would become the Divas into the Women's Revolution that was starting to burble in NXT at that time, and we would soon start to see it over the next year or so in on the main roster. So great moment.
Mm-hmm. Logan, anything to add?
Yeah, I don't think Paige and Emma kind of get the credit that they deserve for kind of starting the Women's Revolution. You know, they give a lot of credit to, you know, Bayley and Charlotte and Sasha and Becky, and they took the reins that Paige and Emma kind of laid. But I really feel like Paige and Emma kind of started the whole thing. Like, they really broke out and had those great matches in NXT. And you know, Paige was kind of at the forefront because she was the one that got pushed up to the main roster first, and she had this big title win. And, you know, it just kind of kickstarted everything. And it ended and AJ's reign at that point had been, you know, 300 something days. She had been the longest reigning champion in history. So it was a big momentous thing that an NXT person came up and immediately beat like the longest reigning champion of history at that point. So just a great moment and kind of kickstarted something that would, you know, kind of change women's wrestling forever.
Mm-hmm. All right. Actually, we have one more. Steve, one more honorable mention, and we'll call it a day.
Yeah, so my last one here, we're going back to 1997, the night after WrestleMania 13, when Bret Hart came out and cut his probably one of the greatest promos he's ever done, where he talks about the match the night before, and he, you know, did some things he's not proud of, and he wanted to apologize to his fans, and you think, okay, you know, that's pretty interesting. And he ends up apologizing to all his fans around the world, except for the fans of the United States. And that's when the flip finally switches and Bret goes anti-American, all Canadian, heel. You know, he says that, you know, the fans, you know, embrace guys like Austin and Shawn. Well, you know, he's tried to be a hero and they reject him. And he gives one of the greatest lines he's ever cut when he says that the American fans coast to coast can kiss my ass. And just such an amazing, great work there by Bret. It begins probably, you know, we talk about how like 94 was one of his best in-ring years. 97, easily one of his best character years from that moment up to a Survivor Series, and just an amazing moment. And he becomes arguably one of the best heels they've ever had at that point.
Mm-hmm. All right. Logan, anything to add on Bret's heel turn?
Nah, yeah, just the formation of the Hart Foundation and all that with his lovable brother Owen and the British Bulldog, just a great moment. And it was kind of weird to see Bret be heel, but it ended up being a very good storyline. And that the rest of his time in the WWE was a he had a great series with Austin. You know, he had a couple of matches with him, and all the U.S. versus Canada stuff was great. So just a great run that he had there to end his WWE run.
All right, and Ben. Anything to add to put the chair on top?
Kickstarted one of the greatest characters in wrestling history, and even led to an even greater speech with the formation of the Hart Foundation 2 or 3 weeks later.
Mm-hmm. All right. Very good. All right, guys. Great debut episode. Thank you very much for bringing the goods tonight. It was tremendous. Lots of fun. But before we go, let's kind of talk about what you guys are also doing on various feeds, what your social media presence is. So, Logan, let's start with you. What do you have to direct people to that you're also on?
I'm at Highway PTBN on Twitter. I have Highway to the Impact Zone. That's with Ben, Sean, Jacob, Matt, and Lewis. We just did our Turning Point episode. We had Scott Shiflett on as our special guest. That was a great show to talk about. We talked about the great AMW XXX cage match, how awesome it was, and how it kind of has the biggest spot in TNA history when Skipper kind of tight ropes the top of the cage and Hurricane Rana's Harris off the top. Just a great moment. But we also have Popcorn Chicken Salad that we just did. We did with me and Ben, did that with Matt. We watched Mortal Kombat. And what else do I have? From Squared Circle, The Silver Screen, we did Scorpion King. But yeah, just check out all the chicken salads that we've done and all that other great stuff on the wrestling and pop feeds. But yeah, that's all I got right now.
All right, Steve, what do you have to point people to?
Well, you and I, of course, co-host Pop Goes the Classics along with Miranda. We are looking at all of the Disney films over on the PTB and Pop Experience feed. Our most recent one dropped recently. We did 101 Dalmatians. That was a lot of fun. I was also on a recent episode of Mickey Mount Rushmore. It was me, Ben, and your friend Ray. We talked about cartoons, specifically comedy and action cartoons. So that was a lot of fun, too. You can also find me at placebnation.com. I have several written articles periodically, the Vintage Wall previewing, the box office report, and the wonderful reviews of Disney. Now the wonderful list of Disney, where I'm ranking several different categories. I'm closing in on finishing up the villains, and we'll start the songs here by the end of the month. So you can also find me over at the PTBN Facebook page. Lots of great discussions, questions. Hopefully we'll have a new tournament starting up here soon, but that's where I can be found.
All right. And Ben, where you got to direct people to?
Okay. On Twitter at BenL1981. Here on the wrestling feed every month on the special relations with me and Rory and Callum. Then we have also the latest episode of Chicken Salad with our special guest Jake Williams. The four of us, me, Sean, Logan, and Jake, watch and review WrestleMania 27, which it says here was really good. No, I've got to cross that out. as Logan mentioned, I was also on Highway to the Impact Zone. We talked about Turning Point. On the Pop Experience, you can catch me with Miranda. We're almost becoming a regular now, Andy. We're back on the regular schedule. On Telly and T. So yes, we're kickstarting that back up. And like Logan said, the first episode of Popcorn Chicken Salad will have dropped by the time you've heard this, where we are talking about Mortal Kombat. And I'll also plug on the wrestling feed, it's been mentioned already tonight, our very special and very serious live watch podcast of WrestleMania 17 and 19. And there's going to be a third part where we're going to debate which one is the best WrestleMania of all time. By the way, the answer is, of course, 17. Don't listen to Logan 19. Or Sean.
17.
19. 18? I don't know. I'm trying to be Switzerland here, guys.
Andy just wants to join in, damn it.
WrestleMania 3. No, okay.
All right. I'll say 30 is my favorite because I was there, but if it's between 19 and 17, I'm going to go 19.
All right. So for me, most of my work is on the PlayStation Pop Experience. Lots of great shows. Like Steve has mentioned, we do the Pop Goes Classics Disney. I also have great shows like Year in Pop, the Muppet Podcast. I'm not going to butcher the name that I actually came up with, but I always forget because it's so long. But yeah, lots of great shows over there. The regular Making Mount Rushmore drops every other Monday. We're going to be doing this version monthly, so check us out every month here on the PlayStation Wrestling Network. Also, Great Debate Wrestling and Evolution will be back fairly soon. So I want to say a big thank you to Logan Crosland, Steve Riddle, and Ben Locke for joining me on the debut episode of Making Mount Rushmore Wrestling Edition. I am Andy Atherton. Thank you for listening, and we'll check you out on the next episode. Take care.